Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Benyart, but hey, stay tuned for the show. But first, this is our Denver Bible Church update. And how many more times do we get to do this? Not too many more times, because Bob Benyart Live is moving to 3 in the afternoons as of tomorrow, Wednesday, March 17th, 2004. Here's a program note. Bob Benyart Live will be on in the afternoons at 3 o'clock. And the benefit of that is twofold. One, the radio audience is on during the day. During the day, people tune into radio in huge numbers. And in the evening, they go to TV. So it's more difficult to build an audience on radio in the evening. Early evening is tough. But 3 o'clock in the afternoon is a great time for to be on the radio. And that's the one benefit. The second benefit is that KLTT is one of the 10 most powerful radio stations in the world, but their 55,000 watts is daylight power. When the sun goes down, they have to power down. And even their low power is fabulous. It goes from Fort Collins to Colorado Springs, throughout all of Denver, of course. But during the day, their 55,000 watts full power hits most of the surrounding states of Colorado. Pretty much all of Colorado, 95% of the population of Colorado, and big chunks of Nebraska, Kansas, chunks of Texas and Oklahoma, New Mexico, and Wyoming get Cheyenne. So we're thrilled to be moving tomorrow to 3 in the afternoon. It's a big development. And for another week or so, we'll continue to do the show in the evening also. Bob Benyart Live at 7 p.m., just to give people time, because not everyone tunes in every night. You know, some people are sinners. No, only kidding. Of course, not everybody tunes in every night, and so we want to give people a chance to know that the program is moving to 3 in the afternoon. So if you happen to just, if you can only catch the show at night, that's it, you're working during the day and you can't listen to radio, well, remember, we're on the web. We're on the internet at kgov.com. So if you enjoy the show, you could just log on at night and go to kgov.com and right click on that night show, that day show, and you could save it to your desktop. Just double click on it, listen to it, however you want to do it. And enjoy the show. It'll be only a half hour, though. But that just means we'll have to talk more quickly than people are used to, and you'll have to listen as quickly as you can. So it'll be okay. We'll get the whole show in a half hour. And less commercial breaks, right? Fewer commercial breaks. But in the meantime, if you're a nighttime audience, this might be one of our last opportunities to invite you to Denver Bible Church. And we were planted by another Bible church, by Derby Bible Church, in the year 2000. They're in the northeast part of the Denver metro area, so they planted us in the southwest for families down southwest that wanted a good Bible church. And that was their goal. And so we just have a wonderful time worshiping the Lord Sunday mornings and studying the Bible in our adult Sunday school class. We have Sunday school class for little kids, too. We're still a small church. And then worship at 11 o'clock. And then Sunday nights, we have our Sunday night Bible study. Been doing it for years, for years before the church was formed. We're now in the book of Ezra. And it's just, we do 45 minutes of Bible study and then half hour, 45 minutes of coffee, dessert, and Q&A and sharing. So we invite you, you're cordially invited to come on out to Denver Bible Church. If you haven't been to church in a while, Easter's coming up. You don't want to be a C&E Christian, right? Christmas and Easter Christian? You don't want to do that. But if you haven't been to church in a while, use Easter as a good reason to come out to church. Come and visit us at Denver Bible Church, and you'll be welcomed. I'd like to meet you. Let us know you're visiting. And so that's it. So come on out now. Stay tuned for Bob Benyart Live.
One warning, there's truth overhead. It gets beyond all the headlines you read. Don't need to
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, America's most popular, self-proclaimed, right-wing, religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. Our phone number is 1-800-8-ENYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. Now, we got an email from someone who claims to be a U.S. Marine who's tuning into the show and is really angry. Really angry. And I'll bleep out the foul language, but I'll read it to you and see if I'm not sure. Somebody handed this to me right before the show, and I read through it and tried to see, well, what specifically did he disagree with? And maybe I missed it. Let's go through it together here. It's from Nick Dauschmidt, midnight_985@yahoo.com. Okay. I am a U.S. Marine who is recently serving overseas in Iraq. I am home now, at least for a while, and unfortunately, since I have been here, I viewed one of your shows. Viewed. Now, I wonder if that means an old TV show on videotape, or maybe listened. I don't know. Let me say right up front that I've seen enough violence, killing, and ignorant people to last a lifetime, and we don't need any more of them. You are quite possibly the most ignorant, blasphemous person I have ever heard of here in America. You should be ashamed of yourself and the way you act. You have the privilege to live in this great free country, and you're just out to do the devil's work. You right-wing conservatives embrace all that is evil and ignorant, and if I were to ever meet you on the street, I would take off my belt and give you the thrashing of your life. He's one of the beautiful people. You know, liberals are so tolerant. That's their whole shtick, right? They're tolerant, free speech, diversity. They love all that. You better shape up your show and get your act together, or else you're going to have a lot more angry patriots who are sick of listening to the utter... Okay, I'm going to censor some here. See you in hell, blankety, blankety, blank. You've obviously forgotten, but I haven't. Semper Fidelis to God and country. So that's one weird – is that a weird letter or what? So when I don't like something I've heard on a show, if I'm going to email them, I've always had a goal of being very specific, saying, here is what you said or reported that I believe is wrong, and here's why. It just seems to me that that's a more effective way to communicate. Maybe this is a more effective way to blow off steam. So he blew off steam, but apparently all I can get out of this. Now, he said he's a U.S. Marine, and so that may or, you know, that could be true. So we have no way of knowing that. But the only real concrete things I could get out of this is that he's a foul-mouthed liberal who believes he's going to hell. Now, that I get out of here concrete. There's no dispute. Nick is a foul-mouthed liberal who believes he's going to hell. So I guess that his letter serves to reinforce my worldview. My worldview is typically liberals are foul-mouthed people who are going to hell. And Nick apparently agrees with a fundamental principle of our understanding of the world. So, Nick, at least where you were concrete, you've reinforced the show's perspective. And where you were vague, we're not sure. Maybe you could call in and give some specific criticism of what you specifically think is wrong that we've said on the show. Specifically, we'd just like to know. 1-800-8-ENYART. That's the number, 1-800-836-9278. All right, I wanted to weigh in on the assault in the NHL game. The Vancouver Canucks were playing the Colorado Avalanche, and it's you guys have all heard the story and you know the news. And it's really tragic. The punch by the Canucks, Todd Bertuzzi, severely injured Colorado Steve Moore. And it was a revenge attack from Steve Moore, I guess a few days earlier in a game. He checked, and it's legal in hockey to check an opposing player under the right circumstances. And so he checked him, and the captain, and it was the captain of the other team. And in hockey, I don't watch a lot of hockey, but my son Zachary, he's an avid hockey fan. How old is Zachary? He's six. He loves hockey. So he would know the rules better than I do. But under certain circumstances, you could check the opposing player. You could hit him with your body. Not with your stick, not with your ice skate, but with your body up against the boards or whatever. And so the Colorado player, Steve Moore, gave what appeared to be a legal check to the captain of the Vancouver Canucks. And the captain of the other team fell. And the Colorado Avalanche player, he wasn't given a penalty. He didn't have to go in the penalty box. It was maybe debatable, but seemed to be a legal play. But the other team got angry. Here's this punk who's checking our captain. So we're going to get revenge. So during this game, what happened was that the revenge came in the form of a punch to the side of the head from behind. So a blind hit to the head. And Steve Moore, now I haven't even seen the video. I don't watch sports news. And I know that that's been played about 1,000 times. I've heard, but I haven't seen it. But he went right out, and he fell to the ground. And the Vancouver player, Todd Bertuzzi, maybe he didn't know or what, that Steve Moore had been knocked unconscious instantly, but he jumped on top of him and basically slammed his head into the ice. And so now Steve Moore is severely injured. His future playing hockey, the last I heard, is uncertain. And Steve Moore his team has been fined. How much were they fined? $250,000? $250,000. He's been suspended for the rest of the season. And then they're going to consider where to go from there, based partly on the recovery of Steve Moore. But the point I want to make, and I know that a lot of people have said this, but it should be as clear as could be, that just because you're playing sports doesn't mean it should be legal to assault someone. And he should have been arrested, charged, and tried for assault. We'll be right back.
At Bob Inyart Live and KGov.com, you'll find literature, audio, and video products that are a must for the library of any Christian interested in studying the truth of the Bible. You'll find essential material like the plot manuscript, an overview of the whole Bible that will clear up doctrinal issues. Then there's The Tree, a fun audio journey back to the Garden of Eden, where you'll learn about this most famous tree and its impact on humanity. Check out the Mount Moriah video. This video gives evidence for the resurrection, combining biblical and secular resources. It's a great witnessing tool. And don't forget the death penalty video. Learn that Jesus advocated the death penalty and learn how God put the death penalty at the heart of the gospel. You can directly help Bob's outreach by subscribing to Best of Bob, Bob's Best 8 Shows of the Month, or build a Bible study library by ordering the monthly Bible albums. There's a lot more, so give us a call at 1-800-8-INYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. 1-800-836-9278 or KGOV.com.
Bob Inyart here with a live commercial break. My nephew, Sean, just asked me, he said, Uncle Robert, is there what in the Bible, where does it say that God mocked people? And he said, maybe after the show you could give me some verses. And I said, Sean, didn't you hear our Nicer Than God Bible study album? No, I didn't say that. But I just printed for him a few pages of examples out of the Bible where God, it should be coming out on the printer right now, where God mocked the wicked and his prophets. and the apostles got in on the act, and the wicked were mocked by God at times, not always, but at times. And it's part of tough love. And our society does it, like with potheads, right? Potheads on Jeopardy. Do you ever hear those radio commercials by the Partnership for a Drug-Free America? They mock potheads. Why? Because they don't love them? No, because they want to bring peer pressure against them so they don't destroy themselves. And that's why God and the Bible and the prophets, the New Testament, we find that the wicked are sometimes mocked and ridiculed. And so we have a pamphlet called Nicer Than God that you can get in our article pack, or you can get our Nicer Than God Bible study album, which is 6 tapes. Really fun Bible study of how the Bible teaches we should judge with righteous judgment. And we're not supposed to forgive all the time, and it's okay to be harsh with folks and confront them at times. So call us 800-8-NYART or go to kgov.com. All right, we're back. By the way, that's also our call-in line, 1-800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. Now, there's a poll out. This is reported by Houston, Channel 2 Houston News, I've got it from their internet website. And there's a new poll out regarding The Passion of the Christ, the movie. And there have been fears that it would trigger anti-Semitism. And according to this nationwide survey conducted for the Institute for Jewish and Community Research, of the Americans familiar with the film, 83% of Americans familiar with the film say that it hasn't changed their view of the Jews in regards to the crucifixion one way or another. But more people say, of the remaining 17%, significantly more said that it's made them less likely to blame today's Jews than they were before seeing the film. And that's interesting. 9% said the movie made them less likely to blame the Jews. Less than 2% said they were more likely to fault modern Jews or Jewish institutions. So the 2%, you know, there's a degree, whenever you do any poll, there's obviously a degree of foolishness out in the general population that will come up if your poll sample is large enough. But in 2% is pretty small, really. So a leader for the Jews for Jesus, have you ever heard of that group, Jews for Jesus? These are Jewish people who have looked to the evidence for Jesus Christ and the resurrection and have been convinced that he was raised from the dead. And they've looked at the evidence in the Hebrew scriptures, the prophecies for the Messiah, and they've concluded that Jesus Christ had to be the Jewish Messiah. So they've become Christians, but they're still Jews. So they could be called Messianic Jews. Some of their ministers, some of them may call themselves Messianic rabbis. Jewish rabbis who believe that the Messiah has come and that he was Jesus Christ. Well, there's a group that's called Jews for Jesus, and that's their ministry, is to reach out to Jews in America and Israel, around the world, with the gospel message. And I have a friend who is a Jewish believer. His name is Rabbi Eliezer Urbach, and he's written a couple great books. And he's, back when we were doing seminars in the Denver area, he's come to a couple full-day seminars. He's endorsed our manuscript, The Plot, a 330-page overview of the whole Bible. On the back cover of The Plot, we have a quote from Rabbi Eliezer Urbach, encouraging people to read the plot to get a better understanding of the whole Bible. So that's pretty neat. Well, anyway, so he's a Jew for Jesus now. I don't know if he's a member of that group, but he is one. And Pops is Jewish. Pops. So if you haven't met Pops, you'll have to come to Denver Bible Church just for that. But he's Jewish. My mom, my dad died, I always forget how long ago, 15 years ago? I forget. And then a few years ago, was it 3 years ago, Mom? She's out there somewhere in Radioland. She found this guy, Albert Sharon. And we were checking him out, trying to figure out who is this guy. And it turns out he worked for the military industrial complex. He was making bombs for the U.S. Army, for the Pentagon. That was his career. Then we found out he was Jewish. Then we found out he had become a Christian years ago. So we said, wow, a Christian Jewish bomb maker. Mom, how'd you find him? So Pops is a Jew for Jesus. So anyway, this regarding this poll suggesting that, if anything, the Passion has reduced anti-Semitic ideas in America, a leader for Jews for Jesus said that not only is the Passion of the Christ, the movie, wonderful for Jewish evangelism, but also, now this is an associate executive director of Jews for Jesus. Her name is Susan Perlman. She said, if people are blaming the Jews for killing Jesus, she said, well, that's a non-issue because he didn't stay dead. How can you be blamed for killing someone who is alive? That's a nice spin. That's a good angle on it. How can you be blamed for killing someone who's still alive? That's pretty good. That is a good one, right? All right? That's so cool. It's like John Ramsey, who killed his daughter, JonBenet Ramsey, and he's now considering running for office in northern Michigan. And so if JonBenet Ramsey, if she turned up alive, then we'd have to stop accusing him of killing his daughter. But tragically, that's not going to happen, and he is guilty. But anyway, yeah, Jesus said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. They didn't realize that they were unjustly killing the Creator, the Messiah. They didn't know that. They should have known that, but they didn't. So anyway, the Jews had lost the authority to execute anyone. They could not legally execute a criminal, an accused criminal. Only the Romans could do that. The Romans had occupied Israel, and it was a Roman governor in Jerusalem, Pontius Pilate, who ordered the crucifixion. It was Roman soldiers who crucified Jesus. And King Herod, who was the king of the Jews, see, they had a king and they had the Roman governor, and the king was just a figurehead. He was a vassal puppet king of the Romans, son of the former Herod the Great. And Jesus went before the king, and the king, he didn't protect Jesus. He couldn't care less. He was glad, he was thrilled that Pilate killed Jesus. In fact, we read in the Gospels that Herod and Pilate had long been enemies. They'd been enemies, political enemies. They didn't like each other. And when Pilate ordered that Jesus be crucified, from that time forward, they were friends. They became friends. Right? Isn't that what your mother used to say to you? Birds of a feather flock together. You want to know what your kid is really like? Look at his friends. That'll tell you what your kid is like. Look at his friends. And so Herod, the king of the Jews, and Pontius Pilate, the Roman governor, they became fast friends the day that Jesus was crucified. That was the beginning of a long-standing friendship. So anyway, I liked her point. I liked her point. Susan Perlman of Jews for Jesus, she said, it's a non-issue. He didn't stay dead. How can you be blamed for killing someone who's alive? That's just so upbeat. It's such a neat, upbeat way of looking at that. All right. Oh, and Andy Rooney, you've heard on 60 Minutes. Now, how many times have I watched 60 Minutes in my life? I can't count that low. I don't know if I ever actually watched a 60 Minutes episode. I've seen, you know, little clips here and there. But Andy Rooney came out a couple weeks ago and called, or was it 1 week ago, on CBS and said that Mel Gibson was a wacko and, you know, just condemning him for making movie on the crucifixion, as though Andy Rooney believes in the crucifixion or even cares. Right? Did he condemn CBS for making movie on the making money on the Holocaust or World War II or Pearl Harbor? Does he condemn Hollywood for making money on Pearl Harbor or Gladiator? I don't think so. He doesn't give a rip. He's a liberal. He hates Jesus Christ. And so he hates Mel Gibson because this movie doesn't mock Jesus Christ. It honors him. So that's why he's angry. So he called Mel Gibson a wacko. And 60 Minutes has now said that they got more response from that comment than they have ever received, ever, and on any segment they've ever done in the 34 years it's been on the air. They received 30,000 complaints. That's a lot. That's a lot. 30,000 complaints for one word, calling Mel Gibson a wacko. Now, maybe, I guess in some of his movies, he played a wacko. And you got to be irresponsible to play some of those roles. But Mel is maybe maturing and certainly seems to have made a movie that will bring a lot of people to the Lord. Doug McBurney was in, where was he, in New Mexico last night, yesterday, and on business. And he met with an old Marine buddy of his, maybe a sergeant or somebody. And the sergeant and his wife, he's not sure if they're Christians or not. In fact, maybe they're not, but they went to see The Passion. And Doug was so thrilled because that gave him an opening to talk a bit about the Lord to them. So that is cool. All right, our phone number, 1-800-8-N-YARDS. That's 1-800-836-9278. Now, I've got an email here. I wanted to do some emails. This is from Moses. I didn't even know they had email back then. It's from Moses of the tribe of Levi. No, this is from a different Moses. Moses_Schrock@yahoo.com. Man, everybody's from Yahoo these days. Okay, to kgovlive@aol.com. That's one way you could email the show. Kgov, K-G-O-V, live, L-I-V-E, at aol.com. Okay, here's the question. Do we forgive unbelievers if they repent based on Jesus' statements? And do we forgive believers regardless based on Colossians? So he's asking a question. Oh, I see. He's read the plot, my manuscript of the Bible, and he's a little of an overview of the Bible, and he's a little confused about how forgiveness works. Are you supposed to forgive everyone? Jesus didn't forgive everyone. The Apostle Paul didn't forgive everyone. Abraham didn't forgive everyone, and God liked Abraham. David didn't forgive everyone. Oh, I know, you're more righteous than Abraham, more courageous than David, more honorable than Jesus, wiser than Paul. I know, you forgive everybody, regardless of whether they repent, because repentance is really no longer necessary in the age of niceness. Bob Inyard here with a live commercial break. So that Bible study album, Nicer Than God, it's a classic. It's just a classic. Have you heard it? How nice is too nice? You know, personally, I'm pretty sick of nice. I'm really sick of nice, to tell you the truth. Well, you know, some nice is cool, but too nice. We're sending people to hell with smiles. Much of Christianity is sending people to hell, smiling and waving at them as they fall down into the abyss. That's what we're doing as Christians. Hi, so nice to see you, homosexual partners. So nice, we respect you. As they go to hell, Bob and Yurt Live, commercial break here. As unbelievers go to hell, we're as nice as could be to them and waving to them, hello, homosexual partners. Oh, we think you're the best. Yeah, there's a little matter of sin, but don't. The big thing is that we love you and we respect you and we honor you and we'll fight for your rights because you're an American too. That's the new Christian attitude towards abominations. It'd be hard to know it was an abomination. So in our Bible study album, Nicer Than God, we go through all that. We talk about, you know, how nice is too nice. And believe me, if you know anybody at work who's too nice, you ask yourself, what's really going on here? Why is this person too nice? And God does the same thing. He looks at you cross-eyed, and he thinks, what are you doing? You're even making me sick. Get real a little bit. So in our Bible study album, Nicer Than God, we deal with forgiving, judging, rebuking, name-calling, mocking. And not that Christians should do these harsh things all the time, but when we should have the tools of evangelism and of edification that God has given us to use. And we should be wise to know, when can we use tough love in these ways? And when would it be inappropriate? So check out the Bible study in Nicer Than God, 6 tapes, $32.95. Call us 800-8-NYART. All right, we're back. 1-800-836-9278. Now, this email here, so this is someone who's apparently read the plot. Finally, Moses has read the plot. I wonder what he thinks of his role in it. Imagine you get to heaven. So, Moses, what do you think of the part I gave you? No, only kidding. It's the plot manuscript is 330 pages. It's an overview of the Bible. And in the plot, I tried to present Moses in light of the story of the whole Bible and how does he fit in to the whole story. For example, if you are saved by the gospel of grace and you're living today in the body of Christ, how do the writings of Moses apply to you? How do they? Like when Moses said, that you can only wear clothes of one fabric, no mixed fabrics. How does that apply? When he said you should not marry someone outside of God's, when he said you should not marry a Gentile, right? And if you are married to a Gentile, you should divorce that person. Well, that's Ezra, too, made that really super clear. The priest Ezra in his book in the Bible. So how do those things apply to us in the body of Christ? How does that work? Well, if you're just reading through Moses, you're going through Deuteronomy, which was Jesus' favorite Bible book, was Deuteronomy. That's the book he quoted the most. How would you know how to apply it to us today? The way you determine that is you need to have a pretty solid overview of the whole Bible, so that you could take the entire Mosaic covenant, the Mosaic law, and see it, and how does it fit in the story from Genesis to Revelation? How does it fit? Where does it fit? How did it come in? Does it continue in force? Is it held in abeyance? Is it annulled? Is it surpassed, superseded? How do you figure out what of Moses' writings, what applies to you today and what does not? Well, to do that, you need an overview of the whole Bible. So I was only joking when I said, I wonder what Moses will think of the part I wrote for him in the plot. But, you know, I think the second best-selling book of all time, at least it was for 300 years. Now, I don't know lately. Lord of the Rings has been selling like wild. Lord of the Rings through the 20th century was, I think, the second best-selling book next to the Bible, if you add up all the different Lord of the Rings titles. So if you compare the books of Tolkien versus the books of God, Tolkien came in second bestseller, God bestseller, best-selling author of the 20th century. But for centuries, the second best-selling book next to the Bible was Pilgrim's Progress by John Bunyan, right? That's a cool story. And in John Bunyan's book, the main character, what's his name? Christian? And he's got a friend, Faithful. I read it so many years ago, I forget now. But they're on a journey, and basically their journey, at the end of the journey, they'll end up in heaven, but they got to pass this river, which is death. And he talks about, you know, the rapture. Some people at the end will get to go to heaven without going through death, but almost everybody. But Enoch and Elijah, they got to go to heaven without dying. And the last generation will get to go to heaven without dying. But for the meantime, we all have to die. So you got to go through the river. But during their journey, so it's a huge allegory. And during their journey, now I haven't read it in 10 years, so forgive me if I get a little bit of the detail wrong. But one of the main guys met a thug on the road. And they were walking up a mountain, alongside a mountain. I think it was Faithful. And this thug comes up behind him. And he looks back and goes, that's a scary guy. And he turns around and the guy grabs him. He said, no, let me go. And he grabs him by the shirt and he punches him right in the face. Just punches him and Faithful goes out flat to the ground. And he's almost knocked out. And the thug reaches down and picks him up and hits him again. And he goes down. And then this thug picks him up again and goes to hit him again. And he ends up being delivered. But he says to Christian, do you know who that guy was? And Christian says, Faithful, I knew who that guy was. That guy was Moses. And I've met him too. He's bad. And that's what I love about John Bunyan. His insight into the Bible is so much better than I'd say 95% of Bible teachers. And that was 1600s. He wrote most of that while he was in jail. And he went to jail in England for what was his crime? He was preaching the gospel. And he didn't have a license from the government to preach the gospel. That was it. That was his crime. And he said, I don't need a license to preach the gospel. I'm going to teach Bible studies and preach. They threw him in jail, and he wrote the best-selling book of 300 years next to the Bible. So he got his revenge. But anyway, he went to heaven, and Moses is in heaven, so he could have asked Moses, what do you think of the part I wrote for you? And Moses will tell him. Probably I'll go, all right, John, get up. But why would Pilgrim's Progress present Moses in that harsh role? Why? As Moses, the Mosaic Law and the Mosaic Covenant, why would John Bunyan present him in that way? Well, I guess it'd be hard to know if you don't understand the story of the whole Bible. But when you get to the New Testament and the writings of Paul, and this is only in the writings of Paul, it's not in Moses. Moses wrote the first five books of the Bible. He wrote Psalm 90. It's not in any of the prophets in the Old Testament. It's not in the Psalms or Proverbs. It's not in the four Gospels. It's not in the writings of James, Peter, John, or Jude. It's only in the writings of Paul. Paul wrote that the Ten Commandments will kill you. They'll kill you. They'll basically beat you to a pulp. That they are the ministry of condemnation, because if you're under them and you try to keep them, you'll fail and they will condemn you. So if you're trying to live by the law, you will be beat to shreds, beat to a pulp. Paul wrote that in 1 Corinthians 15, that the strength of sin is the law. The strength of sin is the law. Because if your flesh, your sinful flesh, you want to do something wrong, and a set of rules says, you can't do this, you can't do this, you can't do this, you can't do this. Oh, that's really going to help you live righteously. No, you're going to say, oh no, just watch me. That's what your flesh will do. So we call it the forbidden fruit. It's the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. That's what the law is. The tree of the knowledge of good and evil, that's what the law is. The law is the knowledge of good and evil. And Adam and Eve ate from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and it killed them. It was a ministry of death. And Satan said, oh, you won't die if you partake of this tree. You'll live. You'll be like God. And so today, 6,000 years later, Christians who don't know the overview, the whole story of the Bible, they say, oh, you have to keep the law, because if you partake of the law, you'll be like God. You'll live. That's what they say. They get it exactly backwards. You couldn't get it more backwards. So the Apostle Paul says that the Ten Commandments are a ministry of death and condemnation. In the covenant at Mount Sinai, he compares the covenant of grace and the covenant of law to Abraham's two sons. He had one son of the flesh, Ishmael, and one son of promise, Isaac. And Paul, in Galatians chapter 4, says the Ten Commandments is like the son of the flesh, Ishmael. And the covenant of grace is like the son of promise, Isaac. But you don't know that if you're just reading Moses and you think, wow, Moses wrote this book of Exodus, Genesis, these are interesting. I'm going to go in there and check it out. I'm going to check it out. But so you go in there and you start reading it and you get so mystified. What applies to me as a Christian? What doesn't? So anyway, that's the reason that at Denver Bible Church, we are constantly looking at the Bible from the big picture, the overview. How does the book of Ezra that we're studying at Sunday nights, how does it fit into the story of the Old Testament? Well, Ezra is part of the trilogy that ends the history of the Old Testament. Esther, Nehemiah, and Ezra are the three stories that end the history of the Old Testament. And then we have 400 years of silence from God until the coming of Jesus Christ and John the Baptist, the forerunner. So it's interesting to get an overview of the Bible. Check it out. That's what we do at Denver Bible Church. And you could do it with us with the plot. One 800 8 NYART. That's our call in line, but it's also our order line. So, you know, have I taken any calls this show? All right, when we get back to the show, we'll take a call. We'll go to out-of-state Michigan. All right, we'll do that. But for now, that phone number could also get you to our order line. And by the way, when we're on the air, you could place orders when we're on the air. In fact, we especially like that. It's encouraging. And or 24 hours a day, you could call. And if we don't answer, leave your name and number. We'll get back to you. Or go online to kgov.com. And you can order there. We've been talking about the overview of the Bible. You can get it from us in a manuscript or on audio tape in an album or on an MP3 CD-ROM and listen to it one way or another. Now, we at Denver Bible Church, every couple of years we take a Bible tour of a country that the story of the Bible unfolded in, all these different countries. And this year we're going to Turkey, and it's not too late for you to come along. If you'd like to, it's $3,400, 17 nights trip, round trip out of Chicago for $3,400, includes air and the land portion of the tour, the neatest hotels, nice hotels, great restaurants, breakfast and dinner for the whole trip. You will love it. It's a Bible tour of Turkey. Turkey is perhaps the second most significant country in the world for being the stage of the Bible events, Bible history. Turkey is the place to go. At Israel, of course, Israel, which is the center of the Bible story, and then Turkey. And, of course, you're going to want to go to Egypt sometime in your life. And if things calm down in Iraq, you're going to want to go to ancient Nineveh, right, and Babylon. And Iran. But right now, Turkey, it's a safe place to go, and it's a neat trip. So call us or go online at KGov. We've got a letter from me at KGov.com at the top of the page, and it describes the entire trip, the itinerary, the details, and you could come along. It's not too late. We leave May 26th, so give us a call. Come on. We're back, 1-800-836-9278. I'd like to go to St. Joseph, Michigan. Carl, speak your mind.
Hi, Bob. How are you doing?
Hello, Carl.
Well, JonBenet's father is thinking of running for office here in Michigan.
Now, Carl, you are in Michigan. You can't get the show until it's tape delay on the internet.
That's right.
But I mentioned that about 20 minutes ago. And so tell me what you've heard about his plans.
Oh, not much. I just knew it ran in CNN. I think it was today.
Mm-hmm.
We actually knew about it last week. There was a Michigan paper that picked up his comments.
All right.
But I wasn't able to call in last week. I knew you were going to say something about it. But
yeah, well, we didn't say. Actually, you know, people who've been listening to the show only in the last year or two, they may not have heard us here at Bob and Yurt Live go through the JonBenet Ramsey murder and the evidence that John and Patsy Ramsey killed their daughter and covered it up.
Well, that's one of the best shows.
Wow.
Should be rerun, yeah.
Well, you know, we'll do it again live. In fact, when we go to our daytime slot as of tomorrow, 3 o'clock in the afternoons in Denver on 670 AM KLTT, we will we'll do that. Well, maybe not tomorrow, but we'll do it in the next week or so.
Yep.
So Carl, was there anything particular you wanted, or you just want to alert us to it?
Yeah, I wanted to alert you to it. I was wondering if you're going to see the story on CNN today. There was another story about another part of the story, though, is that his wife is pretty much supporting him in this.
Oh, yeah, they're right.
And aren't they separated?
No, not that I know of.
Not that you know of. Okay.
No. Now, they wrote a book that was published by probably the largest Christian publisher in the world, Thompson.
Right.
I think it was published by Thompson. It's on the tip of my tongue. Well, anyway, it'll come to me in a moment. But the title of the book is The Death of Innocence.
Right.
And, you know, I believe that they're guilty. And so they wrote this book, and when I saw the cover, here's what the cover is. The title is The Death of Innocence. And what would you think would be the picture on the cover of the book?
Oh, probably that famous picture of JonBenet, the close-up.
Yeah, the little girl, right.
Right.
It's not. It's their picture.
Of course.
The husband and wife.
Yeah.
I couldn't even conceive of that. If one of my kids... God forbid some tragedy happened, and I'm going to do The Death of Innocence, and I'm going to put my own picture on the cover because, you know, now I'm misunderstood. If one of my kids died, I could hardly care that people accused me. I mean, that'd be a problem, but not nearly the problem of my child is dead. And
right.
That would be my concern.
Yeah.
So anyway, let me throw out this little tidbit of one of the factoids of the case, which I think is the clue that breaks the case.
Is that the one about the stay well rested?
Yeah, that's it. in the ransom note that we know that the ransom note was written in the house. And it was a lengthy, rambling ransom note. And we know it was written in the house because the pad of paper it was written on was found in the house. And there was a one false start where the author of the note started to write the note and then ripped off the page and started again, something like that. So we know the ransom note was written in the house. So she died sometime around midnight, and they're supposedly asleep in bed. And he writes this three-page rambling ransom note, and in it he says he's gonna call, you know, at a certain time early the next morning for the ransom. And he says, "I advise you to be well rested." And I think that's the clue that breaks the case. I really do.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense, and I say that because that's the one clue that when I mention it, everyone's eyes seem to, you know, light up, and they say, "You know,
yeah,
you're right."
Right, because if there's an intruder and he's going to maybe kidnap JonBenet and he sexually assaults her and kills her and hides her in the basement and writes this ransom note, the parents are asleep. And they just slept through this brutal crime right under the roof of their house. Obviously, they could sleep through a train wreck. The neighbors say they heard it. The neighbors. So the guy's going to take the time to say, "I advise you to be well rested." They're sound asleep. I mean, there's no conceivable way an intruder, the thought, would ever come to his mind to say, "I advise you to be well rested." So why is that phrase in the ransom note?
Yep, that's always the next question.
Why is it there? What does it accomplish? And that is the clue that breaks the case. All right, Carl.
All right.
Thanks so much for calling and letting us know what's going on in Michigan. Bob and Yurt Live, we have reporters everywhere. All right. So let's see here. Yeah, it'll be excellent. We'll do our JonBenet Ramsey story in our new time slot. And then also, you know what we'll have to find? Now, somewhere around here, we have our JonBenet Ramsey write-up. We have about a three-page write-up, list a number of bullets, probably 30, 40 bullets, each one identifying some evidence in the case or observations about the case. And then at the end is the conclusion. But the key to the case is to realize that John Ramsey, after they decided that they were going to attempt to cover up that they killed their daughter, as they're figuring out how to cover up their tracks, they decided that John Ramsey would leave the house to dispose of some evidence and to do something else. And the fear was that some neighbor might see him driving out or back at 3 a.m. And if their alibi was that they were asleep all night long, and the neighbor says, "Well, wait a minute," just like one neighbor saw, well, I forget now, did the neighbor couple see a flashlight in the kitchen and they heard a loud crack, which with the crack in JonBenet's skull could have been her skull breaking, being hit with this heavy flashlight. And they wondered what it was. Anyway, if their alibi was we were asleep all night and then we woke up and found our daughter had been kidnapped, well, then if one of the neighbors said, "Well, then why did you leave at 3 o'clock in the morning?" They're caught, right? You're just flat out caught. And so what are you going to do? If you can't leave, he can't dispose of some of the evidence that he needs to dispose of. So they write this letter that says, "I advise you to be well rested." So then if one of their neighbors does see that they left at 3, came back at 3 in the morning, they can say, "Well, it's true. We noticed our daughter was missing. We found this letter. We got scared. John went out to search for her. He couldn't find anyone in the neighborhood. He came back, and we reread the letter, and it said, we advise you to be well rested. So we went to bed and went to sleep. That's why they put that letter in there. In case that was their alibi, in case a neighbor saw John Ramsey leave and come back. And he had to leave the house to dispose of some evidence and to bring some back. And while he was gone, Patsy Ramsey wrote the ransom note, as they had decided. And she got a little smart alecky in the note toward her husband. And so anyway, but that's just a snippet of an overview. So John and Patsy Ramsey killed and covered up the murder of their daughter. And what is good, and I'm thankful, that God doesn't let things stay in the dark. He doesn't let them stay hidden. But it's all going to come to light. The truth will absolutely come to light. And this story, you know, most murders, we don't know anybody involved. We don't know the murderers, the victims. We don't know their names. We don't know the circumstances for the vast majority of murders. You know, in this country, we got 10,000 to 24,000 murders a year over the last 20 years. There's too many to keep track of. Used to be if there was a triple homicide, everybody in the country would have heard of it. Today, you might not even know if it's in your own town. Too many murders. Who knows? Who cares? Too much. So, but when we get to heaven and at the great white throne judgment, when the sea will give up the dead and the graves and hell will give up the dead and the rich and the poor will be raised up for the judgment, we will see as John Ramsey stands before us, and it will be judgment day, and the evidence against him will be presented. And we believers will participate in judging him. It's our job to judge the wicked. Isn't that right? Who judges on judgment day? Well, God is the ultimate judge, but he delegates authority to his saints, to the Christians, to the believers, to judge. So the Apostle Paul, he writes to the Corinthians, he said, why are you guys not judging? Don't you know you're supposed to judge? Start judging. Judge with righteous judgment, you morons. Well, he didn't say that, but you fools. He said, don't you know that we believers, we will judge the angels? Don't you know that we will judge the world? You're not able to judge even the least matters? He said, we have the mind of Christ. He who has the mind of Christ judges all things. Jesus said, judge with righteous judgment in John 7:24. There's a book in the Bible called Judges. Ever since Hillary's favorite verse became judge not, Hillary's favorite verse is judge not, lest you be judged. Ever since then, Christians have ripped the book of Judges out of their Bible. That must be an evil book because Hillary says we shouldn't judge. Those judges, they must have been the most wicked people. So, the whole Bible teaches us we have to judge between right and wrong. You have to judge. If you can't judge, if some guy's selling drugs to kids on a playground, you can't judge. You can't say, hey, that's evil. Stop doing that. Don't do that. I'll punch you in the face in Christian love. Get out of here. Call the police. You can't call the police. You can't judge. I mean, Christians are the closest thing to blithering idiots personified that we have in the whole earth. And I'm one. We're in a mess, guys. We need help. So, hey, tomorrow, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, we're going to have to clean up our act. This is Bob and Yurt reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.